Hey everyone, it's Steve with Project Freedom. Today I'm going to discuss my reading of the book Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, and I'm going to tie that into van life and what I'm doing with my camper van conversion. And so what I'm going to be documenting here on social media and YouTube with these videos is my entire journey from starting the idea of wanting to do van life and converting a van by myself and the process of doing that. Then once I get on the road, I'm going to be documenting that as well and all the places I'm going to be traveling and the journey. And a big part of this journey is while I'm working on my van every day right now, it's pretty much my, I would say full-time job, but it's about two full-time jobs. I'm always listening. If I'm not at home designing with SketchUp, the CAD program I'm using, I'm out working on the van and I get a lot of time to listen to audiobooks. And I'm a big reader. I don't read a lot, but I listen to a ton of books. And when I've been working on my van, I go through two or three books a week. And so I've already been through 20 to 30 books. I need to count them all up. And there's been phases of that. I started off reading a lot of history. I've never really delved into history, so I did a lot of that all the way back to ancient Egypt to today. And then I got into a lot of biographies of men that have been prominent throughout history. And now I'm getting more into my bread and butter, which is self-development books. And I've known about David Goggins for a while and his book Can't Hurt Me. And I knew that he was a guy that was going to appeal to me because I definitely am a big fan of the tough love type of self-development books. And they don't really offer a whole lot of coddling, but what they do is they have you take a hard look at yourself. And I think they all operate from this central premise or idea that basically struggle is the only thing that makes us better as humans, and you should embrace that and invite it into your life instead of trying to avoid it. And that's definitely what David Goggins believes in himself, and that's portrayed in his book, Can't Hurt Me. So I'm going to get started with this and go through the chapters and go through my thoughts on this and how it ties into what I want to get out of living in my van and in the camper van transformation journey and the converting your van into a camper van. So chapter one starts out, I should have been a statistic. So when I think there were a few reasons why I did start Can't Hurt Me for a while. I had in my library, I knew I needed to read this book, but I avoided it because I had an idea, probably several reasons, but one of the reasons was that I really don't like motivation. I don't like motivational books. I think it's really cheap and not very useful because it's just some person yelling or using certain language to get you motivated, and it's very temporary. And I'm sick of those books. And it's interesting in Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins says oftentimes motivation isn't worth anything because it's so temporary. It's an emotion. You need something more to get you through in life. You need belief. And that's one of the reasons why I become a big fan of his. Another is that I had a feeling that this book was really going to confront me. And those books are more challenging, of course, to read than, say, fiction or biographies or history, because you're going to have to do something to change your life. And that's just more work. But I'm really glad that I did. So an interesting thing about, and David Goggins has a lot to bring to the table. He's motivating for sure. His story is motivating, but there's a lot more, which is why I like the book a lot. So his life was a lot harder than mine. His childhood was a lot harder than mine and probably a lot harder than most people's. And he grew up dealing with racism. He grew up with a lot of physical abuse from his father. And he's been through a lot in his life. And when he says, I should have been a statistic, that basically means given his upbringing, given his race, that he should have been a criminal and should have maybe died young. And he defied all the odds, which I really think he did, probably just because of his unique mind that he was born with and he worked on and developed. He has challenges after the end of each chapter, which I like a lot. But after the end of chapter one, he says, what was your bad hand that you were dealt in life? A lot of people believe that they were dealt a bad hand in life. And they blame that and they use that to become victims and not take responsibility for their life. And when you read about David Goggins' story, it becomes clear that you really can't do that because his story is way worse. And if he's not being a victim, then you can't either. Chapter 2 is Truth Hurts. And it's interesting to hear about when people talk about their past and things that embarrass them or shame them. And you often think to yourself, well, if that was me, I wouldn't be embarrassed or shamed by them. But you're not them. And we all have different experiences and different values and things. And there's things in my past that I was embarrassed with for a long time that I'm now embraced and took ownership of. And David Goggins basically says that the abuse that he had from his father was this big secret because he grew up in this middle class area, a white area, and they were a black family, and it was just a big secret, and this was a different time. He was growing up in the 80s. Now, 2024, the way kids grow up is extremely different. In just 40 years, it's really amazing how much has changed. And his abuse that he had from his father was something that he just didn't talk about. He didn't want to share. It was very hard for him writing this book telling about that. And you would think today it's almost like children and people are very quick to play victim and blame their childhood trauma and their PTSD. And you're hearing from David Goggins, it was the opposite. He didn't want to tell anyone about it. He didn't want to use it to blame anyone. And he didn't even share it with anyone. That's an interesting thing. Second challenge from the second chapter is he talks about this concept of the accountability mirror, where basically you look yourself in the mirror every morning and you give yourself the truth, the bad things, the good things about yourself. And he has this second challenge is taking post-its and writing our insecurities, dreams, and goals up on the mirror so that when you see yourself in the mirror every morning, you can't avoid these things. You can't avoid this truth. You can't avoid these goals that you have. And I think that's a great idea because we're so distracted as modern humans, and this is a reminder of what your life is about every day. It's a great idea, and I think so many people live their lives just hiding from themselves and hiding from the truth. And this is, one of the things that is great about Goggins is he comes up with these rational solutions to these problems where you can't really avoid the truth. You can't avoid accountability and responsibility. And so he hacks the human mind and our emotional system that basically wants to take the easiest way out of everything and wants to avoid accountability and responsibility. Chapter 3, The Impossible Task. So David, before he had joined the Navy SEALs, he had ballooned up to about 300 pounds. And if you've seen pictures of him lately, he's quite skinny. He's about 100 pounds lighter. I think he's about 6'1", pretty muscular. So when he had heard a Navy SEALs commercial and then he decided that was where he wanted to take his life and he was very serious about it. And I'll take a side note. One thing that I like about David Goggins is I can tell he's someone that has integrity. And this idea of integrity is so rare in 2024 in America. And I think as humans, we have these, our subconscious has a built-in mechanism to spot congruency or incongruency, and it's very developed over millions of years of evolution. And when you listen to people and you see them and you watch them, we can spot congruency or incongruency. We can spot if someone's saying something, and we can spot in their movements and probably a million different ways, are they congruent? Are they truthful? Are they saying what they mean? Are they doing what they say? And in modern times, someone that does that we usually consider very intense. It's like too much. And I'm sure that a lot of people have considered David Goggins too intense, but you can just tell. But when he says something, when he says he's going to do something, he gives it everything he has. And being a business owner myself and having a lot of employees over the last 14 years, I can tell you that's extremely rare for people to have that level of integrity. And so when he decided to become a Navy SEAL, he was going to give it everything or he was going to die. And I think that's what it comes down to. It's you say you're going to do something and that's your mission, and failure is not an option. There's no way out. And you're either going to do it or you're going to die. And that's That's a level of integrity and commitment that's just extremely rare in modern times. So long story short, he had to lose 100 pounds to even qualify for Buds training, which is the training for to be a Navy SEAL. And he did it in 3 months. And he had a statistic during this chapter that only 3% of people are able to lose 100 pounds or more. And in my experience, I know that's true. People losing that amount of weight is a miracle almost. And when people do it, I'm usually very impressed and I have a lot of respect for them because it's like quitting a drug, maybe even harder. Quitting many drugs, I would say. Challenge three is stepping outside your comfort zone every day. And it's basically to write down in your journal all the things you don't like to do or that make you uncomfortable. And then go do them every day. Growth and getting better only comes through facing your fear. And everyone has fear. It's only the unique people that actually continue on and complete the thing and do it in the face of fear. That's the difference maker. Chapter four is about his idea of taking souls. And this is an interesting idea. He talks about his Buds training. The Navy SEAL Buds training is considered some of the hardest training in the world. And it sounds pretty hard from what I've heard about it. I haven't been in the military or done boot camp or anything like that, but I've read several books by Navy SEALs now discussing Buds training, and it's definitely a separator of people, of men and boys. And I think only 20-30% graduate that start out in Buds training. So they try to make you quit in a lot of ways. So taking souls, his idea is basically embracing the pain of anything you're going through and honoring your commitment. So a lot of people, they really live their life doing everything based on their thoughts and emotions. If they don't feel like doing something, they're not going to do it. And we just have the luxury to live that way in modern times, unfortunately. If their thoughts come in and their thoughts say don't do it, they're not going to do it. And I think what Goggins is saying here is that you make a commitment and you do it no matter what. And no matter what pain you feel, no matter what comes up, you honor that commitment and you complete it. No matter what you think, no matter what you feel. And a lot of times in the book, he's saying, your feelings and your thoughts are your worst enemy. They want to take the easy way out. Naturally speaking, through evolution, your mind wants to take the easy way out, meaning your thoughts and feelings. And that's a pillar for this concept of chapter four. He's saying he made a commitment to become a Navy SEAL. And of course, the training was hard, but in that commitment, that has to be there before you can really do anything else in life. If you really want to achieve something, the commitment is the foundation. Because if someone leaves an escape hatch or a way out of doing something or a plan B, they're going to be ineffective in meeting their commitment. And also, since everything is competitive, there's going to be people like me, there's going to be people like David Goggins that will come and compete with you, and their level of commitment will be far deeper than yours, and they're just going to beat you. So there's many reasons why this commitment's important, but if you have that commitment, and only then you can really embrace the suffering. Then you can, and when he says stealing souls or taking souls, he's basically saying he's laughing in the face of the he's laughing in the faces of the drill instructors at Navy SEAL Buds training that are trying to abuse him and trying to make him quit and are treating him poorly. He's laughing in their face. He's doing things to antagonize them. He's showing them that they can't get under his skin. And even though he's not in the power position, he's still putting his mind in the power position of that situation by basically saying, you can't hurt me. You can't stop me. I enjoy this. I'm not like everyone else. I'm not going to whine. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to show you anything, any weakness. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to smile as you're putting me through these very difficult. During their hell week, they don't sleep for 5 days, and they don't sleep. They don't eat much. And it's just, I think it's 130 hours of physical training back to back. And so most people are going to look not very good. They're going to look like they're suffering. And he's saying, I'm not going to show that. And that's what he means by taking souls. It's basically putting yourself in the power position in your own mind and other people's minds in every situation. And there's this one drill instructor that he talks about. I think it's Psycho Pete. And he was just a sadist. He just liked to see people quit, and he was a bully. And David Goggins didn't like bullies because of his father. And he zeroed in on Psycho Pete, and Psycho Pete zeroed in on him as well. And he wanted to show Psycho Pete that you're not going to beat me. You're not going to see me suffer. I'm going to beat you. And that's really what that idea of taking souls is that if it doesn't matter what position you're in life or what you're facing, if you don't show the weakness, if you don't give anyone else the satisfaction of hurting you, of seeing you down and out, you're beating them. And you can really show this whenever you want. I often think about, I'm a big fan of Mike Tyson. I'm a boxer. I do MMA. And I often think about the level of intimidation that I'm 42. So I was in the Mike Tyson area in the 90s. And anyone my age or older knows about this. And now it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Anyone who knows Mike Tyson knows a lot of his opponents were just beat before they even entered the ring because how he intimidated them. And Mike Tyson was a smaller guy. He was shorter. I think he's 5'8 or 5'7. A lot of the heavyweights he was fighting were much bigger, but Mike wouldn't show any weakness. He showed just this sort of animal level ferocity. And if you're a fighter and you fought, you know how important this is. That energy that you portray and show your opponent is more than half the battle. More than the kicks and the punches and the physical training. It's very important. And if you can get in your opponent's mind and you can make them believe that you're invincible and you're ferocious, you've got them beat. It's a big mental game. So I think that's the Mike Tyson equivalent of taking souls, that basically it's intimidation or showing someone, I'm just way stronger than you. And that's what he's talking about. And he's saying challenge 4 from chapter 4 is basically wherever you're at in life, whether in your work, in your family, whatever, if someone's really getting under your skin, you have an opponent, he says. How you beat them and turn the tables is you just do your very best. You work harder than everyone. You show them that what you're made of. And a lot of people get caught up in the politics of things, and they get caught up in the he said, she said, and he or she hurt my feelings, and it's not fair. And he's saying, just forget all that and work your ass off. And I love this. And I love this type of tough love, self-development content. And so what he's saying is just make yourself undeniable. David was in high school, a basketball player. And when you're like David Goggins, or even if you're like me and you do your own thing and you excel in things and you're an overachiever, you get a lot of haters from all areas of life. And for whatever reason, his basketball coach didn't like him. He didn't play him, even though he was a good player. And so David Goggins' response was becoming the best defensive stopper in Indiana. So he made it so that his coach had no choice but to have him in the full game, because he couldn't afford not to have his best defensive stopper on the floor at all times. And that's what he's saying, how he took his coach's soul. Chapter 5 is about having an armored mind. And he makes a lot of analogies to physical training, which I think are very apt, because the more you physically train, the more you put yourself through your mind will become stronger as well. They're one and the same. And in this chapter, he's basically saying, just so when you lift weights and you develop calluses on your hands, or if you destroy and then make your muscles stronger, and over time your physical body gets much stronger, he's saying the same thing happens with your mind through the experiences you have and through taking ownership and through pushing forward and not making yourself a victim. So that the more suffering you face, the more challenges you face, the more new things you face, as long as you don't, he identifies basically everyone, this is something I've known for a while and I've said for a while, but everyone has two choices with what happens to them in their past. They can use it as the reason why they become great, or they can use it as the reason why they quit and they're a victim. He's saying, as long as you use your past and take ownership for what it is and use it to become great, then you just become stronger and stronger. And this chapter in the book is basically saying, go out and chase your dreams and embrace the failures, and you're going to fail. the harder you try, the higher you aim. Thinking about a military commercial, I think aim high is the Air Force slogan. But the higher you aim, the harder the fall is going to be when you fail, and you're going to fail a lot. You're going to fail more than you succeed. And he's saying if you take those failures and you keep moving forward, that calluses your mind. You start to develop an arm and mind. And coming back to the van life, camper van conversion, taking a bare van and then converting it into a full camper van with a water system, electrical system, plumbing system, propane. I'm going to have a lot of automation and computers, a lot of electrical items. That's a big project, especially if you don't have a background in doing that type of thing. You have to learn a lot, and it's a big endeavor. And you're going to face, every day I face challenges converting my van. Every single day, something fails. I have multiple failures per day. Yesterday, when I was working on my roof, there's so many challenges. I can't even list them all here, but since I don't have a indoor dedicated space, I'm out in the desert in the elements, and it was cold and windy yesterday. So you're dealing with that. You're dealing with the sun, of course, and all the pollen in the air. I was sneezing like crazy. My nose is running all day long. And I was on the ladder all day. I don't know if you've spent 12, 14, 16 hours on a ladder before, but it's different than just standing on ground. You're using a lot of muscles to stabilize yourself. You're putting a lot of pressure on a small portion of your feet. And similar to working under the van, it's just, you're not just sitting and working on something or standing. It makes everything harder because you're standing on a ladder that isn't completely balanced. It's on dirt. And it's not like a scaffolding system that's secure. There's always a little wobble to it. So everything you're doing from your feet up with your hands to work in the van is more difficult because of that. And there's always something that goes wrong when I'm working on the van. Always. I'm always going to break a bit or a drill, or I left something at home because I'm in the middle of the desert and I have to take everything out there. I can't find something because I have hundreds of tools and pieces of material. Can't find it. I'm searching for it. I'm going crazy because I can't find it. Something breaks. I install something in the wrong spot on the wrong side. And then I've wasted a lot of time. I have to redo everything. So just the act of converting the van, if you're not a pro or an expert at it, if you're a novice at all these things like I am and you're a beginner, not every single thing about the van I'm a beginner at, but most of it. And so you're just going to fail and fail. Doesn't matter how much you learn. You're just going to have to learn from your failures in a lot of ways. And let's talk about once you're out living on the road. There's going to be a lot of challenges. When you are not living that safe, stable life of living in one place and you go to work every day and you come home and that's all you do, there's going to be a lot of failures and a lot of challenges just in taking on that nomadic life. Not only with your van, but with your experiences, things just often don't go to plan. And so by taking on this conversion commitment and the van life commitment full time, you're taking on a lot of challenges just in and of itself. And I think that's one of the big reasons why most people won't do it. They might dream of it, but they'll never do it. This is about visualization, which a lot of self-development people talk about how powerful this is. One of my heroes, Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of his number one messages is having a vision. He says you have to visualize it and the power of the vision. And I think humans are like chickens with their heads cut off, running around in circles their entire life unless they have a commitment and a vision and a strong one. And Arnold a lot of the times talks about how you have to develop that vision over time. You have to make it clear. You have to be obsessed with it. And Goggins here is saying, instead of using your mind to hurt yourself and think negatively, use your mind to visualize your future and what you're going to become, your commitment. And what's going on between your mind every day, that really is going to produce your life. And he's saying, instead of just letting that run free on default mode, take control of it and use it as a tool to build the life you want. Chapter 6, wow, there's a picture here of David running back in the day and he's ripped. I think he said he was about 200 pounds, about my height. He's 6'1", I'm 6'2", and he is just all muscle. and come down from so much weight. He was a power lifter before, and then we lost all that weight, and he was a runner then, and that's what will happen. If you bulk for that long and you power lift and then you cut down everything, you're going to look pretty good. It's a long process, though. And yeah, I'm really into that physical fitness. And here in this chapter, he's talking about it's not about a trophy. This is an important thing to me and a lot of self-development and coaches. They talk about this. You're running a race against yourself, not against other people. You're not doing things for the goal of it. You're not outcome oriented. You're doing it for the journey. You're doing it for the self-development and the process and the person that you have to become in order to reach that outcome. That's more important. Because if you want something new for your life, you're going to have to become a new person, because the person you were can't achieve that. And that's really where the value is in what you have to become to meet your commitments. It's not about receiving a trophy and in reaching that goal. It's about who you have to become to get there. And if we're talking about the van conversion, you have to become a lot of things. You have to become an electrician, a plumber, a auto body work guy. I've become that. You have to become a lot of different things and wear a lot of hats in computer programmer, since I'm doing the automation, all kinds of different things. And you have to become a different person in order to complete this camper van conversion project. You have to become a person that can live out on the road in that nomadic lifestyle. And I think that's really where the value in everything is. As you learn and grow, you're becoming someone new. And a lot of people are outcome oriented, and this really affects their life. If they don't think they can get the outcome, if they think they'll fail, they don't even try. And this is something in owning a law firm and having employees, and then owning a solar company and having a door-to-door team and having hundreds of employees in over the years in that business. This is something that's rare, that people understand this and they see it this way. 99% of people, I think really the way they see life is that they're so outcome oriented and they don't really love the journey and the self-development process, and they don't see a whole lot of value in growing and becoming someone better. And I saw that in my solar company, because knocking on doors and selling solar, especially in the summer when it's 120 degrees in Phoenix, it's a challenging job. I've had a lot of military veterans, special operations veterans, and they're used to being out in the desert in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait and on deployment in a very similar desert and harsh conditions, walking around all day. And they really struggle with this, because it's not just the physical aspect of it, it's the mental aspect of the constant rejection that you face when you're a door-to-door salesman. And from the very beginning, when I first saw door-to-door sales, the first moment I saw it, I didn't see it as just selling something door-to-door. I didn't see it as something that was beneath me, having a law degree and being a successful lawyer. And I'm usually much, my education level is usually way higher than other people doing door-to-door. But a lot of people think it's beneath them, even with just a high school degree. And I never saw it that way. What I saw was something very different, which most people don't see. I saw a skill. I saw mental toughness. I saw the ability to thrive in a harsh environment. And I saw the value in that from day one, from the very first second. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want to sell door-to-door. I wanted the toughness. I wanted the experience of that. I wanted to learn how to do it and become good at it, become great at it, and understand it and teach other people and use it as I've always used that business and those door-to-door teams as a vehicle to coach people and help them in self-development. It's never been about selling solar. It's been about helping my teammates and helping people become better and using the door-to-door sales team as a vehicle for that. And after doing that for several years, I've realized I need to just go straight to what I want to do, which is just coaching people directly that want to improve their lives and working with them directly instead of using that vehicle. Because I realized over time, that's essentially what I want and what I've always wanted. And so I tell that story And it comes in a lot to converting your van and taking that journey of living the van life. It's not about an outcome. It's about who you have to become to do all those things and to convert your van and to live that life and who you're going to be at the end. It's not about having a van that's converted. It's not about going to certain places. It's about, for me especially, it's about who I'm going to become. And that's really the gold in it for me. And when you talk about what David Goggins has done and being a Navy SEAL, an Army Ranger, coming through his childhood and being a successful person, running all these ultra marathons and running a book and just the amazing amount of things he's done, or someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger and what he's accomplished, what you find out about all these people, it's all the same. They're running a race against themselves. It's about a journey of self-development for them, becoming better. It's not about winning that race. And if it was just about winning a race, they'd quit really early because they'd be satisfied as soon as they won a race. As soon as they achieved something, they'd be satisfied and they'd stop trying. Now, with all of them, with me, with anyone like this, there's a bigger goal. And you're never done. I'm reading Goggins' second book I'm almost done with right now, which is Never Finished. Follow-up to Can't Hurt Me, and that's, you're never finished. You're never done. So you can't win anything, you can't achieve anything, and say, I've arrived, I'm done. I heard a self-development guy once say, you can't out-evolve your lifetime. We don't live that long enough. Even if we did live longer, we couldn't out-evolve it, because evolution is, it's never done. And he joked in a dark humor and said, the ultimate achievement is death. You know, that's when you stop growing and you stop achieving. And that's a thing that Goggins is definitely talking about in his book here. And when you run that race against yourself and you run the never-ending race of self-development, you can achieve amazing things. But if it's just about one race and one conversion, you're going to quit so early. Your goals just aren't high enough. He talks about this concept of the cookie jar, and it's a method for him to, this is challenge after chapter 6, it's a method for him to get through difficult and challenging times, especially, say, if he's running that ultra marathon, which I think is over 100 miles of running in one go. And once he gets to that 70, 80, 90 mile marker, it's extreme pain and suffering, and you need mental tools to get through it. And like the cookie jar is things that you've done in the past to achieve things. And I think he rightly says that a lot of people don't really take ownership. Not only do they not take ownership of the bad things that have happened in their life, they don't take ownership of the good things and the achievements they've done. They don't really say, wow, that was really amazing what I did, that me accomplishing that. That's Goggins in the book talks about being one of the unique and being different intentionally and sticking out because you're so different, because you work so hard and you achieve so much. And he's saying, you got to look at yourself and say, you know what? I'm rare. I'm one of the unique in achieving what I've done in my life and that thing. And I'm an animal. I'm a monster. And I can do this. I can do anything. And using that to get yourself, like you would take cookies out of a cookie jar, using that to get yourself through things and to really motivate yourself and defeat self-doubt. So this chapter is called The Most Powerful Weapon. And of course, it's yourself or the untapped part of yourself. Goggins says that there's a 40% rule, meaning that we only really always ever give 40% of our effort. There's usually a remaining 60% that you have that's untapped. We usually have 60% more to give. We don't know it's there because we've never pushed ourselves beyond that 40% limit. And it's about that untapped potential. You hear a lot of people say we only use 10% of our brain. There's a lot of ideas out there like this. And so you have to push yourself beyond what you think is your limit. He talks about this in the context of running, I think the first 100-mile race he ran, he didn't train at all, which is just insane. And if you run a marathon, you haven't trained at all, you're going to destroy yourself. And it was like he was really heavy, too. He'd been lifting a lot, and he had done no cardio for a while. And then he just got in this 100-mile race, which is an extreme version of something I would do, so I can relate with it. But that's very extreme. And he nearly died. And he gives some graphic explanations about losing his bowels during the race and all kinds of things. But he said, that was the hardest thing he ever did in life, even though he's done a lot. That's very difficult. But he said after that, everything changed, because once he survived that, and with David Goggins, it's not about just finishing the race. It's his bar is, did I die? No. And if I didn't die, then it was a good thing. That's how far he's willing to go. That's a very high level of commitment that nearly no one has, which I respect a lot, and I embrace that idea. And he's, I didn't die. I got close in that 100-mile race. And then after that, I knew everything changed, because that 100-mile race was no longer something that I was afraid of or that was daunting. I think he banged out like another 100-mile races in his lifetime or more, or doing ultra marathons where he's doing not only 100-mile running race, but then swimming a long ways, biking hundreds of miles. He talks about this idea of a governor. Now, if you've ever been to go-karts before and you've raced around the track, you'll notice at the different go-kart places, they have different governors on the go-karts. And what the governor does is it regulates how fast you can go. That go-kart can go faster than you're going on the track, but it's got a governor on there to keep you at a certain speed. And depending on the track and the facility, you can go faster or slower. And this is for safety reasons, of course, and for people like me on there that are going to run into other people for fun. And he's saying you got to remove the governor from your brain, and you do this slowly, that over a course of time, and he uses physical fitness as the vehicle to do this, that you push yourself a little bit more every week, 5% each week, in everything you do in life, 5% more, 5% more. And over time, this is how you beat your governor system. You can't just, you're not David Goggins, you can't just run the 100-mile race out of nowhere. The best way to do it is slowly, which takes discipline, and it takes patience, which I think was the reason he identifies why he just did that, because he was this very impatient person, and I can relate with that a lot. But you got to beat these governors in your mind, because you have to accept the idea that our minds and our feelings, everything in us is designed basically to stop us short, to seek comfort, and to quit. That's our evolution of millions of years. So you have to beat this with your higher mind. You have to make a commitment to beat it, because everything inside of you is going to be screaming to quit. And you have to, if you don't accept that idea that we're just made to be quitters, we're made to take the easy route as human beings, as Homo sapiens, it's going to be hard for you to push through it, because you're going to listen to those thoughts and feelings that are telling you to quit, instead of and then stepping back and saying, oh, I see you. I see you, thoughts and feelings that are trying to make me quit. And I'm something else besides my thoughts and feelings. I'm not going to listen to them, because I have a higher purpose. I have a commitment. And I'm going to ignore that side of me, that human side of me that is telling me to take the comfortable route. There's been times with my camper van conversion where I've thought about quitting, because since I don't have a place to work on, it's made it quite challenging. More challenging than I thought it would be, because just getting out there and taking all the stuff out to the middle of the desert, unpacking it, working on the elements. It's been an uncharacteristically rainy and cold winter here in Phoenix. Usually never rains here. It's rained a lot. It rained yesterday, and it's been cold, colder than usual. And not cold, but probably by your standards, but by Phoenix standards, it's been cold. And our bodies have changed to deal with that 120 degree weather, especially because last summer I was out there knocking doors and experiencing it. So that 50 degrees, ooh, I could feel it. But even then, who cares? Get the job done. You have a commitment. But it has been challenging. And then I think yesterday I put in a 12-hour day out there, and I spent several hours in the morning making content. And then at the end of the day, when the sun goes down, I have to pack up. I'm always a little chapped. I'm always grumpy because I got to spend another 30 minutes packing everything up, driving back, and I'm cursing the world and my neighbors and everything that makes me have to drive out in the middle of the desert and work in my van, and I can't just work on it in my parking lot and have my comfortable, warm condo just with water and food and just a few steps away. I got to go out in the middle of the desert, but I always just push through that. It's just another thing, and I think what makes these books like David Goggins' Can't Hurt Me is it puts things in perspective. That experience I'm having out in the desert on my van is really easy compared to his life and what he's experienced. One of the great things about life is that talent isn't required to succeed. And this idea of talent is an interesting phenomenon, if you've ever really thought about it, philosophically speaking. I'm a musician, and I've been playing guitar since I was 15. I've been singing a long time, and so now I've been at it a long time, 27 years, and when people see me play or sing, they often say something like, "Wow, you're so talented." And I think as musicians, we usually laugh or we accept this, but what people don't see are the thousands of hours I've put into playing guitar and singing and the practice. And I think Goggins says in his book, 99% of what you're going to do and all the work is going to be alone. No one's going to see you. You're not going to have cheerleaders. And that's just the way it is. It's going to have to be about you, not about everyone else. And talent is interesting because people often use it as an excuse not to become great themselves. They say, well, that person's so talented, I don't have that talent. And talent doesn't have much to do with it. When I was in law school, I was born fortunate in some ways, and I was born disadvantaged in some ways, just like everyone, except maybe David Goggins. He had all the disadvantages, if you read the book. But most people, they're born with strengths, they're born with weaknesses. One of my strengths has always been, school's always been easy for me. If I go and attend the class and I pay attention, I take notes, I really don't have to do much studying. And this was true all the way through college and then even to a degree in law school. Law school, I really had to start doing a lot of studying and work at home. And what makes it difficult is they assign you hundreds of pages of reading every night in law school. And so you can't really avoid that. You're not like reading through it in class. All you're doing is just discussing the case, or I should say the teacher's discussing the case and they're grilling you on it, which is what we call the Socratic method of law school, where they don't give you any answers. They just grill you and ask you questions. It's an interesting, look it up. It's an interesting phenomenon. And school's always been relatively easy for me. And taking tests, I've always excelled at taking tests. I don't experience a whole lot of test-taking anxiety, and I'm just good at it. And there's a lot of things I'm not good at, though. A lot of struggles I have that other people don't have, but that's one thing. And I had a friend in law school, we'll call him John, and John was not gifted with the gifts that I have. School and learning for him was very difficult. And it was for David Goggins as well. David Goggins had learning disabilities. And for him to learn things, he basically just had to probably spend 10 times the amount of time I have to learn things. I pick it up, boom, quick, first time. David Goggins had to do rote memorization of everything, which increased his workload. And my friend John was the same way. He had to study 3-4 times as hard as me, and he failed out of law school. And, you know, he ended up coming back to law school, graduating. I think it took him 4 times to pass the bar, but now he's making a lot of money. He's a very successful lawyer because John is a salesman. John's a rainmaker. And now he has a lot of other people doing the hard work for him, and he's focusing on the clients and getting the new business. And it takes all types. But there's a lot of people that did really well in law school that weren't very successful as lawyers. And David Goggins, again, uses himself as the example. Not only was he just dealt a bad hand as far as the abuse he had from his father, he wasn't born very intelligent. I think he's intelligent in a unique way, probably not an IQ way. David Goggins' intelligence, I believe from reading this, I don't know the guy, but it's in his unique way of looking at things. I can see it's not necessarily a type of intelligence that would do well on a standardized test like I could, but it's an intelligence where you can see things differently. And I think that's part of his gift that he shares with people, is just this unique way of seeing things. But he was really born with no talent. And so he has a lot of physical ailments as well. And he's saying, but it was my hard work that got me there, my mental toughness. You can really achieve anything with your hard work and your mental toughness and your strong commitment. And you really can't use that talent thing or your lack of it to give yourself any excuses not to achieve your goals. Challenge 8 for chapter 8. He's talking about organizing your life. I've done this, but we can all get better at it. Most people just waste a lot of time. And he's saying in this challenge, get out your journal and really keep track of everything you do every single day and how much time it takes. Make time stamps and look at it after a week, and you'll see that you have a lot of time that you're wasting. lot of people always talk about not having time to do things. They're too busy. I've always said, busy doesn't exist. It's made up. It's fake. It's an illusion or an excuse. The only thing that exists is priorities, values. If something's important to someone, they make time for it. Doesn't matter who it is. President of the United States, no one. You know, someone at the bottom, someone at the top. It doesn't matter. If it's important to them, they're going to make time for it. And a lot of this is people are just being busy and they're not getting anything done. So he's saying, take a look and take control over that time you're wasting and be more productive. Uncommon against uncommon. And this is an idea I've already talked about. One of the central themes of David Goggins' book is something that I've felt my whole life and something I relate with and something that's very true. When you're this type of person like David Goggins is, when you're an overachiever, when you're not going out and drinking with everyone and hanging out, when you're spend all your time, your waking time, getting better and working and achieving, and you're not watching movies and taking luxury time, when you have high goals, when you don't quit, you stick out like a sore thumb and everyone can see it. And you're not going to be ever one of the guys. You're not going to be accepted by everyone. You're not going to, oftentimes you won't even be popular. People are going to hate you. And just by being that person, that overachiever, you're going to get so much hate and you're not going to be part of the crowd. You're not going to be part of the group. You're going to be alone, always, in a way. I think now that David Goggins has achieved all this and he's a celebrity now, he's still alone, but maybe he has more people around him that accept him. But he earned that. He grinded. And that's the central theme of this book and something you have to accept just as human nature and the truth. Because when you achieve, when you give everything you have every single day, when you're obsessed, when you achieve in your life more than what other people could achieve in 100 lifetimes, like a Goggins or a Schwarzenegger, what this does psychologically to other people is it confronts them with how weak and how small, and it confronts them with all their deficiencies and all the times they quit on themselves and they didn't follow their dreams. And that's why they hate you, because you're shining a light. You're a light. You're a beacon. You're a lighthouse. And most people, they don't shine the light on everyone else's deficiencies, but you will, because they look at you and of course they see themselves and what they could have been. And this is why you got to embrace the haters, and why when you're doing well, haters are a good sign, because you're being that lighthouse and they hate you because there's a part of them that hates themselves for not achieving what they've always wanted to achieve, not chasing their dreams and living their life. And they're going to, what's interesting is that humans, the vast majority of them are like crabs in a bucket. If you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket, eventually some will start to get out, start to claw their way out. As soon as one is about to get over that edge and get out of the bucket, other ones just climb back down. And there's a very strong part of human nature that does this, that not only, I heard a self-development guy once say that not only do most people not want you to achieve, not want you to succeed, most people want you to fail. And they'll actively do things to try to make you fail. That's harsh. And it's not very nice, and it's depressing, but it's the truth. And David Goggins says that in so many words. And it's important to accept the truth and expect it. And this doesn't have to bring you down. It can lift you up. And knowing the truth and expecting it can make you more powerful, but you have to be careful. Obviously, you're not going to listen. Arnold says, don't listen to the naysayers. Don't listen to the naysayers. It's one of his 6 rules. Look it up. And because they're just trying to bring you down. Oftentimes what they're saying, you can listen. What David Goggins does is something I think is hilarious. He would take all his haters after he wrote Can't Hurt Me and became a celebrity and all their comments online, and he would record him saying it, and he'd made a mixtape. He put it to music and he'd listen and rock out to this, all the nasty things people said about him and the racist things. That is, there's one thing that makes me like this guy. It's that. That is another level of embracing your haters and really objectifying what they're going to say. And So you want to be one of the unique. This makes you very unique. If you are that type of person, people are going to say you're obsessed. They're going to say you overwork. There's going to be a lot of people, including your family and friends, that are going to try to make you stop working towards your goals. And what you have to understand, there's a lot of things in society that say, live a balanced life. Don't work so hard. And it's all BS, honestly, to keep you down. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try to stop you. And you're going to have that relationship with yourself where you're never going to stop. And that's what he's talking about. Be one of the unique. And you can always take comfort in the idea, in the fact that you're incredible for being that unique, because most people are just so brought down by peer pressure and brought down by conformity that they can't shine all alone. They have to run with the herd, the mediocre herd. Challenge 9, talk about what you're going to do differently to stand out intentionally. It also comes with this idea, you're never going to arrive in life, ever. Even when you achieve all your hopes and dreams with money, fame, status, respect, you're not, you haven't arrived. And anyone who thinks they've arrived is wrong. And as soon as you think you've arrived and you lose that humility and you lose that drive to be something more, that's when you're dead inside. That's when your life's over. That's when you reach stagnation. You're never going to arrive. It's always more. And only very few people can understand this and embrace it, because most people, 99% of people, will say, wow, that sounds like, it's so contrary to what we've been taught all our lives. And they'll say, wow, that sounds like you're never happy. And I don't want to be that way. I want to be happy. I'm not going to get into the phenomenon and the philosophical idea behind happiness. But like I said, you have to be one of the unique to understand what I'm saying. And that life is about the journey. It's about climbing the mountain. It's not about the top of the mountain. And when you see it that way, you'll understand what I'm saying. The Empowerment of Failure, Chapter 10. This is something common with all the great people, all my heroes. If I look at my heroes, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Michael Jordan, David Goggins, Mike Tyson, there's others, I just can't think of them. They all say the same thing. Michael Jordan, probably one of my biggest heroes. He has a famous quote that says, I've missed over 6,000 shots. I got cut from my high school basketball team. I've been trusted with a game ball 39 times in the last 5 seconds, and I lost the game for my team. And because of all those failures, I succeed. And in sales, there's a lot of this too, especially in door-to-door. You're going to get rejected 99 times to get one sale. You're going to get rejected 1,000 times to get one sale. And most people, their biggest problem with door-to-door or in life is they get that failure and they're like, I'm going to quit. They can't accept or take the failure. They're spoiled. They're spoiled on participation trophies. They're spoiled on success or perceived success. And they haven't had to live a hard life. They haven't, and they probably never will embrace the idea that life is failure. Life is suffering. Your successes and your achievements, you're going to get one for every 1,000 failures. And that's the way life is. And it's part and parcel to being successful. Failure is part of success. You can't have it any other way. And that's why most people just don't even try or don't achieve anything, because they don't want to fail. And when you don't want to fail and you avoid it, you can't succeed. You just can't. It's impossible. And he's talking about a lot of what David Goggins talks about, I like, because he's taking these facts of life and these facts of human nature and he's spinning them and he's hacking them to be an advantage. Like any great warrior, like any great tactician, he's making these perceived weaknesses or disadvantages into advantages with his own mind. And failure is empowering because it gives you more fuel, more motivation to achieve what you want. When you have haters, when you fail, when you have people that don't accept you and they reject you, it's like dumping gasoline on your fire. And Goggins says this a lot in the book, something I've said a long time. Motivation and desire to be great, it comes from your shadow. And everyone has a shadow side of themselves. It comes from the dark side, the pain and the suffering. It always comes from there. Show me someone who's a millionaire and billionaire. I'll show you someone who couldn't live without that money. They needed it. They needed to be a billionaire or they would die. And it comes from their shadow. their feelings of deficiency that drive them. That's what they rely upon. And it's very powerful. And you want to use this to not have it use you. A lot of people don't even want to look at their shadow or even accept that it's there, and they don't want to use it. Yeah, you want, it's there no matter what you do. Use it. Use it. It's very powerful. It's the most powerful thing you have. And when you fail, it feeds your shadow. It feeds your motivation. It's just another reason for you to achieve what you want, to beat yourself, beat other people's expectations, right? It's a gift. Without failure, we would all be so soft and weak, because it's the failure that makes us strong, failure that makes us keep on going. If everything was just given to us, we would just sit at home and do nothing all day and get fat. It's the failure that drives us. You got to embrace it. It's a gift. Write out your failures, the worst ones you've had in your life. This is the challenge for chapter 10. He's saying use all your failures and write them down, even the ones you don't want to look at, and make a list of things you can fix. Make a list of the things you've learned from them. Make a list of how you're going to do things different the next time to learn from the failure and to grow and to achieve. Or maybe keep failing until you achieve. Embrace the pain. Don't be soft and weak about it. Those are David Goggins' words. Got a picture of David Goggins' feet after running a race and them getting frostbite. Nasty. What if? Now, you probably heard something like this. They say that when people are dying, they don't regret what they did. They regret what they didn't do. There's a lot of wisdom in this. It's very true, of course. You don't want to live a life of what if. I think David Goggins is a good example of this because he's an action guy. And he talks about some of the drawbacks, but I can relate with this a lot. He didn't think about doing that 100-mile race. He just did it. And you'll notice this about people that are successful. They're not afraid of failure. And because of that, they don't sit there and analyze everything to death. Because planning and analysis is good to a point, but past that point, all it is just procrastination and fear. And it's avoiding something in disguise. People will plan something for their entire lives, but they'll never do it. And a lot of times you just need to jump in and take action. Because the more you think about it, the more you're going to not do it. You're going to talk yourself out of it. And you're going to be a what if person. And so the thing about being a person that jumps into thing and takes a lot of action is they're going to fail a lot. Because it's the person that plans everything and overanalyzes and doesn't do a lot of things that doesn't fail. And they also don't achieve either. They're not taking the risk. It's just like in sales or with the camper van or the van life. A lot of people dream of it. I have so many people that come up to me in my van and say, I've thought about doing that. I want to do that. But they're never going to do it. Everyone dreams of this van life, but they're never going to do it. They're going to talk about it. They're never going to pull the trigger and actually do it. And I saw this a lot when I was training salespeople. In sales, we talk about closing, which is basically pushing the conversation towards a sale. And when you're a closer, what you do is every interaction you have with the customer is it's geared, everything you're saying is geared towards pushing the customer down the line towards the sale. And you only really get this if you've been in sales. And when people are new to sales or they're just not that good at it, someone who's a closer, they're always doing this. And every time you really close, if you're really doing it right, you're giving the customer two choices. No, or yes, let's do this. And I always say, you really want a really strong no and or a really strong yes. You don't want to, I want to think about it or maybe. And when you're a good closer, you won't get maybes. You'll get a very strong no or a very strong yes. And the reason why people, even if they've been in sales or new to sales, don't close and they just sit there and chat with the customer and they never even ask for the sale and they don't get sales, they waste a lot of time, is because they're afraid of the no. They're afraid of the rejection. They're afraid of the failure. So they don't even try to close. They say, oh, I'm just a nice person. I don't like pushing people. No, you're not a nice person. You're afraid. You're a fearful person. You're afraid of getting rejected. That's what you are. And they hide it behind this niceness, or people will hide it behind this analysis, paralysis. They're planning for so long. Now they're just afraid. So you don't want to be a what if person. You want to take those risks and those chances. You can only achieve by doing that. This is the end of the book. So Hope you got something out of this. Again, I've read a lot of self-development books, and there's a lot of crap, like horror movies. You're going to have to see about 10 horror movies to find a good one. And I think a lot of ways self-development books are like that, because a lot of this stuff has already been written. It's a rehashing of the same ideas. Especially when it comes to these books, I've noticed that are maybe geared more towards men. The market is more aimed towards men, or this tough love idea that men seem to embrace more. I'm not saying you have to. Women like this as well, but that's definitely part of the marketing plan. And a lot of it is just, be a man up. Stop being a bitch. And it's just not helpful. There's no tools given. There's no intelligence behind it. There's nothing real. And I don't need that. I'm that for myself every day. What I need is our tools, things I can actually do, something more tangible, exercises, challenges, things that I do. Like his idea of the accountability mirror is great. He's got a lot of ideas in the book that are just great tools. That's rare. And to have these tools that he's giving that I haven't heard before, it's rare. Anyone can rehash, especially with ChatGPT, anyone can rehash a motivation book. No, it takes 40 years of suffering and hard work to write a book like Can't Hurt Me and to be that type of person. So I definitely recommend it. It's got 200,000, I think, listens or reviews on Audible. It's a very popular book. And there's a reason for that. It's quality. And I'll end this by saying, I think, like I said in the beginning of the video, we as humans can spot this congruency or incongruency. And in the words of David Goggins, and then hearing his voice in the Audible version, it's pretty cool because they read it, but him and the author also, off the cuff, discuss it as well and give you the behind the scenes, which is great. But you can tell David Goggins is congruent. He's a man of integrity. What he's saying is the truth. There's no bluster. There's no bluffing. There's no arrogance. There's no sales pitch manipulation. It's just truth. And that's super rare. And there's people you can tell us about. You can, when someone's incongruent, we don't necessarily spot it as incongruency. We just get a feeling and we're turned off by it. But you can, I think people, even just by reading the words of the book, you can spot the congruency. It checks out. And this isn't a conscious thing. It's our subconscious supercomputer that runs this congruency test, these congruency tests. And the subconscious goes, checks out. That's why his book's got 200,000 reviews. And I don't know how many, I'm sure it's sold millions of copies, and other books sell nothing. That congruency, the realness, the rawness. So hope you got something from that. And I'll see everyone soon.